Hey, it's Jeff and Jeremy from the Ultra Running Guys. And if you're here, you probably already know that we started this podcast to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey.
And we just wanted to take a moment to say thank you and let you know how much we appreciate you being part of the Ultra Running Guys community, because we know there are a million other ways you could choose to spend this time.
We love hearing from you. We're always trying to improve. So if you have guest suggestions or feedback, hit us up through social media or reach out to us at theultrarunningguys@gmail.com.
And again, thanks for plugging in. And with that, enjoy the episode. And remember, when in doubt, just show up. Welcome back to the Ultra Running Guys. You got Jeremy Reynolds and Jeff Winchester of the Ultra Running Guys. And the reason that we're here is to help you take your next step in your ultra running journey. And a huge part of knowing what your next step is knowing what goes on your race calendar. So a while back, we started these race spotlight series, and I think you're really going to enjoy tonight. Jeff, tell us what we're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. I've enjoyed them as well. So tonight we're going to talk about the Daytona 100, which is a point-to-point race that begins in Jacksonville Beach and goes south to Ponce Inlet, which is about 10 miles south of Daytona. The course is flat and is a solid choice for a first ultra or to set a PR. The course is pavement, full pavement the entire time. It runs along the entire coast parallel to the Atlantic Ocean, but you're not running on sand. You're actually running on pavement. I think it's important to note. But one of my favorite things about this race more than anything else is the fact that the race director himself is Bob Becker. And so Bob is somebody that personally inspires me because I'm an older runner, I like to say, and Bob is much older than me. And I love that about him. And to give you some perspective, Bob currently holds the age group world record for 48 hours with 167.5 miles that he set just last year in June of 2023. At the nice young age of 78.
No excuses.
None. And he's also the oldest finisher of Badwater 135, which we have talked about a lot on our podcast. We've had multiple guests. We've had Chris Cosman on the show talking about it. And he finished that in 2022 at the age of 77. And so to me, Bob shatters that myth of just the idea that you are old and at some point you have to hang up your shoes. And so to me, there's no better race director to inspire us to take our first 100 than this man himself. And so Bob Becker, race director for the Daytona 100, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, look, we're really excited about this. We live on the beach ourselves. We're used to flat running, and knowing Florida, I know, you know, it's going to be a flat run. Like you said, it can be fast, maybe a great race for a first or a PR. But we're going to talk about the race itself. Everybody listening, we want them to know, how should they prepare? What should they know? All that good stuff. But one of the things that we like to know first, what is your personal favorite thing about the Daytona 100 as the RD?
Well, the spectacular scenery, I think. The fact that it's a race along the ocean road. The views are phenomenal. You're running through some really laid back old Florida towns, but you're also running through some very, very high end real estate. And you wind up in this little town of Ponce Inlet, as you said, at the foot of a very historic and beautiful lighthouse. The lighthouse, there's a little park right there at the foot of the lighthouse, and that's where the finish line is. So it's a great finish line. It just kind of seals the beauty of the race, if you will. And when it's all over, we do our awards presentation immediately across the street at a rum bar and restaurant that's right on the water. So, I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that.
It's a great way for the race director and all the volunteers to relax as well after they've done everything.
You bet.
Lighthouse and rum bar, right? I just heard people register. So why don't you give us some background? We talked a little bit about the history, and you told us a fun little story, but how long has the race been around? How long have you been involved with it? And then tell us what time of year it is as well.
I will. Yeah, the race is the second Saturday in December, which this year will be December 14th, 14th and 15th, actually. This is the race 10th year. This is the only race I've ever directed that I didn't create from scratch. This was a race that I took over 2 years ago. So it had an 8-year history, or 7-year history, actually. This will be coming up my third year. And the reason that we have this race on the second Saturday in December, when I took it over, there was a history of it being on the first Saturday, is because we found out the hard way, without having any advance notice, that two of the towns along the route, including St. Augustine, have Christmas holiday parades on race day. And when you're trying to get your crew through there or race support vehicles, that can hold you up a little bit. So we sat back and took a look and decided to move it to the second Saturday. Last year, it worked out just beautifully. So that's where we are, second Saturday in December. So yeah, it's been 10 years and races, you know, mature at this point. Our staff is, has been around for a long time now. And it's a great race experience for first timers, especially because we have such great support out there. And I can elaborate if you'd like.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely want to talk about that. And we even mentioned crew vehicles. Yeah, I think there's some unique stuff, right, about how you can register crewed or uncrewed. We definitely want to get into that as well. Sure. One of the things, so it's been around 10 years. We like to know what keeps people coming back. We heard what your favorite thing was, but from a runner's perspective, what do you think it is that keeps people coming back to the Daytona 100?
Well, as is the case with many races that are mature, you tend to have a group of people that come back every year. And so it's that camaraderie thing. It's one of the most important things that has kept me as an ultra runner over many years and keeps me in the game as a race director. The fact you get to see old friends, and that's particularly true in the Florida running scene. So generically, that would be the first thing. Second thing is, it's really a great way to kind of end your running before the holidays, before Christmas and New Year's get there. It's one of the last races in the area, one of the last probably in the country. And the weather is generally pretty spectacular. Northern Florida in December is generally not going to be 95 degrees and humid. And the weather's going to be good. Now, you can get a hot day, and you need to always prepare for the unexpected. And you can get a rainy day. But generally speaking, the weather is really great. So it's a fine way to wrap up your year. And I think that's one of the reasons that people keep coming back. And again, I know we're going to talk about support and all that. So the beauty of the race and the fact that the race is so well supported are important factors as well.
You know, one of the things I love about this is this is going to release in May, right? As people are starting their summer running and they're going to be like, oh yes, I need to sign up for this race in December.
I'm kind of sad that it's no longer going to be offered where I can run through a parade, because I think that would be fantastic to roll up on Rudolph. So Bob, you definitely described the race as being one that sounds ideal. It sounds almost like a perfect setting for new runners, for somebody who is just getting their feet wet in a 100-mile distance. But we also know that 100 miles is 100 miles. And what is it that you think that runners will often underestimate about this race? Do they sometimes think it's too easy?
I think where we see underestimation is typically in runners who are either brand new or who haven't had a whole lot of experience. And it's exactly what you just said. They underestimate the difficulty of 100 miles. And I don't, like you said, it, no matter where it is, I don't care if it's Leadville or if it's Daytona 100, 100 miles is still a long way to go. And, you know, you need to always have that balance of nutrition and hydration and electrolyte replacement, and have the proper shoes and socks, and know how to deal with blisters and stomach issues and the myriad of things that inevitably will come up during a 100-mile race, never mind the psychological and emotional highs and lows. So, I don't know that there's a specific thing, but it's just those generic things are true at this race as they are at any race. Again, because the race is well supported, and I know we're going to talk about it, you can run with or without a support crew. You're not out there in an isolated fashion, and it's a straight shot along the ocean road, so you're not going to get lost out there.
So one thing I will mention, and anybody's listened who's been plugged into us for a while is going to be like, yep, knew this was coming, because we talk about it quite a bit, especially being somewhere flat. But if somebody's tuning in for the first time to check out the Daytona 100, one of the things that we've talked about quite a bit, so I would imagine running down the coast of Florida, there's not a whole lot of natural walk spots, right? So I would imagine it's very easy to overdo some of the running. It's very flat, working on the same muscles. We've had episodes where we talk about some of the walk run intervals. And so if you're not sure about that, we did an episode with Jeff and Katie Wilson, highly recommend checking that out. Because you can, I would imagine, you tell me if this is right, but you probably see people run themselves into the ground pretty early on the nice flat roads, and then spend the next 2/3 of the race kind of slogging it out.
Well, we don't see too much of that, because I think people do realize that if they're going to be running a road race and all of their running is on trails, they have some thinking to do. They really do need to get used to the pounding, and there is a certain amount of pounding involved. On the other hand, you don't have the issues of turning, you know, on a technical route of worrying about rocks and roots. So there, you know, there are some trade-offs. But yeah, you definitely want to do some training for sure on roads or, you know, bike paths, whatever you happen to have available to you. No question about that.
So you've mentioned a couple of times, we've touched on the idea of crewed and uncrewed and the different types of support. So can you explain the difference for those who are listening on what it means to be a runner who's going to register to be crewed or registering as an uncrewed runner? What would be the difference for me?
Absolutely. So if I may elaborate, the route is a point-to-point 100-mile race. We also have a 50-mile and a 50K. We have aid stations set up roughly every 10 miles and unstaffed water/ice stops every 5 miles. So a runner can run on their own without a support crew, which I'll describe in a minute, and have lots of access to food and water and electrolytes and sunblock and all the other stuff that a good aid station is going to provide you. Hot food at night, experienced people at these aid stations. So there's a lot of support, professional timing. You have timing mats. We also have a very experienced crew of race marshals that are along the course the entire way and monitoring safety and rules compliance, but safety and making sure that anybody that needs a hand and some encouragement, they get it. We have a large medical team. So there's a lot of support out there for people who want to just go out and kind of do their thing. And we also have drop bags that are allowed at certain places. And for those that don't know what that is, basically you're allowed to put some personal items, whether it's your favorite food or a change of socks or night gear, in a bag, literally with your name and number on it, and leave it at certain aid stations so that when you get there, your stuff is there for you to access. So again, running by yourself without a crew, there's a lot of support, and it's something you can do in this race. And with one exception, anybody can, which I'll explain in a moment, anybody can run uncrewed. Now, the option is to have a support group. And some races in the country require you to do that, where you can't just run without somebody being there to support you, meaning people in a vehicle, typically a minivan or something, who leapfrog you down the course, meet you every 2, 3, 4 miles to replenish that water supply, give you fresh ice or food, and all of your stuff is in that vehicle, your own particular choice of food and so on. So as an example, you need to change your socks and you're running uncrewed and you have some in an aid station somewhere. Unless you have them in your backpack, you have to wait till you get to the aid station to change your socks. If you have a support crew and you meet them every 2 or 3 or 4 miles, you've got those socks waiting for you whenever you want them, right? And we all know that that beware the chair thing. But the fact is, if you need a break, you've got a crew. You can crawl in the van and lay down and take a 20-minute nap if you have to. All right, so a crew will leapfrog you along the course and support you in any conceivable way. In our race, runners who have a crew can also access food and whatever they need at an aid station. That's perfectly fine. The only condition that we impose for running uncrewed, and it's based on our experience in part at this race, is you have to have had at least one 100-mile finish that's verifiable in order to run 100 miles without a crew. You can run your first 50-mile or first 50K without a crew. That's fine. That's your choice. But to run 100 miles in this race, you either have to have had some experience at that distance, or you have to have a crew or share a crew, which is also allowed.
I think that makes a lot of sense because obviously safety is going to be a big factor in a point to point. Like you said, you've got incredible support out there, but obviously, you know, you don't want to put people in a bad situation. So I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, let me ask, is it if you register, is it two different divisions or does it change your rankings at all? Or is it all just the same race? You just want to know who's going to be supporting.
It's all the same race with the same cutoffs. Many years ago, I'm also the race director for Keys 100. We did have separate divisions and we found that it really wasn't necessary. It just didn't seem like it made that much difference. And so we have one single race, whether you are a crewed or uncrewed. in each of the distances, of course. And for what it's worth, we also have a four-person 100-mile relay that we started last year, which is another great way for somebody that's never done an ultra to kind of get the flavor for what it's all about. And that is something we do at Keys. And what we've done, we found over the years that runners who have done half marathons or marathons get on one of these relay teams, and they become very inspired by the ultra runners that they're literally running alongside. And it's like, hey, if that guy can do it, why I'm going to give this a shot next time. And it really does bring along our next generation of ultra marathoners. So yeah, we're really, really glad to have introduced the relay option last year, and we're going to continue with it.
That's awesome. So one thing that caught my attention when I was looking at your website about the race itself was the directions for the course itself. There's a lot of different roads and stuff that looks like the runners take based on how the directions are worded and everything. But you mentioned that you have race marshals. Are the race marshals there to help people stay on track on the course?
Not typically, because it really is, there are very few turns on the course. You go through St. Augustine, that area, there are a handful of turns, or a couple right at the very beginning. But we have also something like 100 signs along the course to be sure people, if there's any question at all, that they're going to know where to go. So the marshals are there really more to monitor runners to be sure that they're between aid stations and not having issues where they may need some help. That's really their primary goal. Rarely is anybody going to get lost on this course, again, because of the signage. But in addition, we publish a formal race guide. It's like a 36-page magazine. And in it are not only very detailed maps, but also literally a mile-by-mile, blow-by-blow description of what the course is like, where recommended locations for a crew to meet their runner, for example, where there are bathrooms, where there are gas stations, where you have to cross the road. And some places you do. The details are all there. So if you have a crew, the best practice is when you meet your runner, the crew, having looked at that information, should say to the runner, okay, we're going to meet you in 3 miles. And in that next 3 miles, you're going to cross the road once, and there's a bathroom a mile and a half down, and we'll see you in 3 miles. In other words, use that information to prepare the runner. If you don't have a crew, my recommendation is that a runner really study this stuff beforehand, so they have an idea of what they're going to experience out there. But they also can ask at any aid stations or any marshal, what's up? What's ahead of us? I need a restroom. Is there one close by? I think I have a blister problem. Where's the next medical person? That's the kind of support that they also provide.
So that helps me a lot, because when I first looked at the website, I saw that particular information from the race guide, and I thought, that's a lot of information. If I was running the race solo, I would feel somewhat overwhelmed. But to hear that you have thousands of signs basically that help kind of guide the direction, and you have the support at each of these spots along the way, that then the runner can actually reference this information to give themselves some visible landmarks along the way of what to expect, makes a lot of sense. And I think kind of hearing that versus when I just go to the website and kind of read it myself, it helps me understand the rationale behind the boat. So I appreciate you going into that.
Well, and it's funny too, because I was thinking, okay, as a runner, it sounds like a lot. And what you said of, hey, it's pretty hard to get lost. We got it marked. We got people out there. Mm-hmm. I was like, cool.
Right.
Don't worry about it. But if my wife was crewing for the crew, mm-hmm. I'm like, poof, that is exactly what I want. Right. Because then, like you said, it's like, hey, sidewalk starts here. Park, you can park here. The details are exactly what I would think a crew would want to know.
And it saves you the pressure of having to answer those questions.
That's right.
Those questions.
Hey, Shannon, yeah. Look at the guide.
Please read the guide, because I don't know.
Yeah. Well, that whole list by list, the course details list. I mean, that if you have a crew, especially, you want to do a pre-race plan. Even if you don't, you generally create some kind of a plan. What are you, what kind of pace are you going to keep? What are you going to do? A run, walk? You generally have some type of plan based upon the race itself and what to expect. And certainly if you have a crew, having a race plan that incorporates the places where you expect to meet up, how frequently, for example, some runners like to meet every single opportunity they can, every mile or two. Most runners don't want to meet that often. And so you create your plan according to whatever you think is going to work for you. And you can change along, you know, change along the way, change on the fly. There's nobody says you can't, but that information helps you figure it out.
Yeah. Let me just go ahead and point out real quick before, and it's not even part of our notes, but on their website, they actually have a whole section for the crew of some questions you can have in your first crew meeting as well. And so if you're not going to run this race, there is a page on this website is value add for how to have a crew. And so I would definitely check out their website because of that. That's made available for anybody.
And one other thing I want to reiterate that I love that you said is because one of our, we have two races and the tricks that we've had is to, the whole goal is to try to get non-ultra runners around ultra running. Right. And so from a relay aspect, especially if you just want to hang out with some of your friends, your crew is built in. Right. So you can have that experience, be inspired. So if you're listening to this and you're like, well, I don't know that I'm ready for an ultra or whatever, I would highly recommend looking at that option as well, because it seems like just a great way to go execute and test.
They're a lot of fun. Relays are just a lot of fun. I mean, if you've ever done one, you know, that's true. So. Yeah.
So I do have one question. I don't know how it plays into this race because so a lot of races, there tends to be a spot where you see more DNFs, you know, than others. And it's kind of like, hey, watch out for this. Or if you can just get through this area, you know, with this being kind of a point to point along the Florida coast, do you see a spot where you tend to see more drops or, you know, any words for runners on that?
Well, that's a yes is the answer to the question. But again, it's pretty generic. It's the it's sort of that bewitching hour between like 11 p.m. and 3 a.m., right? When people in this race, 100 miles, tend to be roughly 75 miles into the race. So we have an aid station. It's actually a really great aid station at a park 73 miles into the race. And that tends to be the place if people are going to drop that they drop. Because they've reached that point where they're, you know, they're pretty beat up. They think about it and they're pretty wiped out. They're really tired and there's still 23 more miles to go, 27 more miles to go, excuse me. So that tends to be a place where more people drop than anywhere else. But I think that's probably more, again, more generic than anything else. And we always encourage, and we try to train our aid station folks to really encourage runners to if they're in that mindset to drop, to take their time, sit down, get some food, get some water, close your eyes for 20 minutes if you need to. You have plenty of time to finish this race. And so often people will then kind of get a second wind, become rejuvenated and say, you know, well, maybe I'll try to get to the next aid station. And we certainly encourage them to do that. And it's amazing how many people wind up finishing the race that might otherwise have quit. But that point in the race tends to be where the majority of those who drop.
Well, I heard you say it was a great aid station. Maybe it just needs to be a bare bones, miserable aid station.
Yeah, it's too comfortable. Yeah.
Don't make them comfortable. And I don't have this in my notes, so I apologize for this. What is the overall cutoff for the race?
The 31 hours is the cutoff of the 100 mile. 31. And the 50 mile and 50K have all day. We basically, the finish line is open. They have all the time they need, you know, essentially 24 hours to finish the race.
And I know it's laid out on the site or in the guide, but in terms of mandatory gears, I know you have some safety requirements. Just talk to the runners real quick about things they need to plan for.
Yeah. Well, the most important thing is night gear, right? So the vast majority of this race is run on bike paths and, you know, sidewalks and so on. But there are some miles where you're running on the road facing traffic. And you're always facing traffic if you're on the road shoulder. And it's the shoulder, you're not in the middle of the highway. But, you know, there's a lot of traffic around and it's a Saturday night and you need to be visible. So we have, all of my races, a very, very strict rule about the hours when you must wear reflective gear 360 degrees and blinking lights front and rear. People always ask who aren't familiar with it, why blinking lights in the rear? Well, you have a two-lane road and somebody's driving from behind and passing, they're going to come awfully close to you on the shoulder on your side. So you want to be sure they can see you. And that's the reason for that rule. Other than that, it's mostly a function of recommending what people should do if it's a hot day and how to deal with heat and so on. But the only real mandatory gear is that night gear.
makes sense. And that sounds like experience.
I never thought about that. Somebody passing, that would be why you would have it behind you.
That's like experience ever. Talking. That's all it takes is a few of those and like, okay, new rule.
Yeah.
All right. So you already talked about in terms of a requirement for registering uncrewed. Does the race sell out? What do people need to know about registration? Any other considerations?
Well, the race is, if I may, has kind of somewhat been resurrected. Okay. The race had some issues in its earlier years. And I'm not talking out of school. The race director who founded the race and asked me if I'd take it over told me about it. Right. So I had had some experience there working an aid station for a few years. And anyway, the race had some issues. So we've had to reestablish a good reputation. The race did not have a marshal crew, did not have a medical crew. It didn't really even have a viable finish line. So it's going to take us a few years to get to the point where we feel we've maxed out with participation. So last year we did not sell out. We were close, but we didn't quite sell out. We do limit the number of runners, and that's primarily a function of trying to understand how many vehicles the road will handle without us causing a problem for the roadways. I think we have a lot of room for growth. At this point, we may sell out, the 100-mile race may sell out this year, but right now we're good to go. There's still plenty of room in all of the, actually four different events.
So if I hear that right, I think, okay, it's open, there's room, but if you're into rum bars and lighthouses, don't wait too long, right? Get that registration in.
Yeah, I would. And I'm real upfront about this stuff. And if somebody is thinking about it and they want to reach out to me in a month or two and say, you know, how you doing? How close are you to selling out? I'm going to tell you what the story is. So, you know, I understand that some people just not willing to commit early on, and so be it.
Yeah.
You know, we do have an increase in price later in the year, so there is that to think about. But this early bird period, you know, will save you some money. So,
well, it's also a December race, and where we are in the calendar when this comes out, it's going to be in May, and so you're looking at a perfect timing for the entire training plan to kind of land on a December race. So this works well. So if somebody's inspired to doing it, this makes a lot of sense to putting on their calendar at this point.
Yes, okay. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, I think that we've gotten a lot of great info for the runners, for everybody listening. I hope that you got what you need out of this. Obviously, if there's any questions that we failed to ask, feel free to send a message. And Bob, it sounds like obviously you're very approachable at answer the questions. One of the things, though, before we go, I'm interested. What does it mean to you to have the runners come run your race?
I feel honored to have a runner come and run my race. There are lots of races and lots of choices. And when runners decide to run a race of mine, I want to be sure that they walk away with the greatest possible experience. So, I'm honored when they come. And I always think of, as a race director, I always put my runner hat on and think, okay, as a runner, what would I want to see? You know, talking about getting lost on the course, right? Well, it's pretty much a straight shot, but you still need to have some confidence signs out there, for example. So we go a little overboard sometimes with that stuff. But as a runner, tired after, you know, 30 or 80 miles, that's what I would want to see. So that's what we try to do. Basically, it's you come to me and, you know, you're making a commitment, you're spending your money, you're training hard. I want to be sure you have a great experience from start to finish, and therefore the rum bar at the finish line. Now, we have a big party at the finish line with, you know, lots of cooked food and a great opportunity to celebrate and swap race stories with your new best friend. So
I think it's fantastic that you said that. I mean, we just talked about the fact we are race directors as well. The fact that somebody comes to run your race and that you see it as an honor, I think it's great. It's one of the things that maybe runners don't always recognize is that we do like that. And we all put our heart and soul in these types of races. You put your heart and soul into this race, as well as the other ones that you host. And just for having somebody to participate in something that you have loved and put so much time in, it's not about getting their registration fee. It's really about them coming and experiencing something that you loved and put so much of your own heart into. And so I agree with that 100%. And thank you for saying
good.
That.
Yeah.
Yep. And not only that, but as we mentioned in the intro, your breadth of experience, just absolute legend in the sport. And so, you know, for somebody to come run the race and have that experience be the thing that that's kind of guiding the support and everything. I think there's a lot to be said for that. And so real quick for everybody listening, again, hope that you found the value in this. We do have our podcast, The Ultra Running Guys, where we talk to guests all the time. So if you're interested in that, go subscribe, share with your friends, all that good stuff. But Bob, I think this has been such a value add. Our motto is just show up. You've been showing up for a long, long time. You've been some really big showing up recently, but I have no doubt that as a race director, you're showing up for the folks at the Daytona 100. So thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you guys very much, Jeff, Jeremy. It was a pleasure.
And make sure that all the links are posted. So go check them out. And like I said, if there's any other info you need, just say the word. We'll talk soon.
Cut. All right, listen, thank you so much. We recognize the fact that you are probably just hanging on just for a couple more minutes as you're finishing up your run. But really, we do want to give you a huge thank you for the constant support that you've shown us. We hear you and we feel you. And the best way for us to continue to grow is for you to share us with your friends. Tell them what you put in your ears when you're out there on a long run. Hit the like button, leave us a comment, leave a review, and give us some direct feedback on what you like about the show and also what you don't like. We're here to improve and do it for you.
And it really means the world. And listen, if you would like to support financially, you can connect with us on Patreon at patreon.com/theultrarunningguys, or you can use the support link in the show notes. Any and all support goes directly back into growing the show and helping us get better at what we love to do, which is to serve all of you. And with that, finish up that run, get cleaned up, and just show up.
Clean.
Clean.